For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Today on The Grave Talks, 6 Feet Under Texas, a conversation with author Tui Snyder. Step into the world of historic cemeteries, cemetery symbolism, haunted places in Texas, and paranormal encounters with author and speaker Tui Snyder. Tui brings forgotten stories to life as a Texas-based expert in cemetery symbolism and haunted history with her best-selling books, Understanding Cemetery Symbols, 6 Feet Under Texas, and Paranormal Texas. We explore the myths behind cemetery symbols, tips for ghost hunters, and chilling tales of true hauntings in and around the Dallas-Fort Worth area, including Tui's personal encounter with her doppelganger at a haunted hotel. Whether you're a seasoned ghost hunter or just intrigued by the paranormal, today's conversation will leave you inspired to look closer at the graves you pass by and the stories they tell. Today on The Grave Talks, 6 Feet Under Texas, a conversation with Tui Snyder. Tui, thank you so much for joining me today. I kind of stumbled upon you, I think it was your books first, because I was kind of looking into haunted Texas and like haunted places in Texas, in particular Mineral Wells, Texas. Then I came upon you, and you fascinated me. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk about why I'm so fascinated by you, Tui.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Carol. It's really exciting to be here. And Mineral Wells is one of my favorite places, hands down. So
I kind of want to talk about it.
But, oh, yeah. Lots to say.
So you've written books about haunted Texas, and I want to talk about that. But I want to first start with your interest in cemeteries, because you've written some books about cemeteries. And we were just talking about the 6 Feet Under Texas book. But there's also another book, Understanding Cemetery Symbols. Hadn't even thought about that before. All the symbolism you would find in cemeteries on different gravestones. How did you end up getting interested in cemeteries?
Oh, boy. Well, my interest in cemeteries, it goes way back to when I was like a little kid living in Virginia. And, you know, back when I was a little kid, your parents would just let you, you know, they'd kick you out of the house, like, go play outside if we don't want to see you till dinner. A little different than today. So much less supervision. And my friends and I would play in this historic cemetery that was, well, really a graveyard. It was next to a church. And that was also where we would have our Girl Scout meetings. But we would do all everything you really shouldn't do in a cemetery, as in we would run around. We, as our little, you know, 8 and 9, 10-year-old selves, we thought we had assessed what was dangerous and what wasn't. But we spent a lot of time running around in there, reading the people's names. We didn't do any historic research at that age. We just made up stories about them, and just being, having that access to people who had lived before and looking at the dates it just made me so curious because, I mean, until I was adult, I thought that I didn't like history. I thought it was the most boring topic in the world, you know, because, oh, this war
That's
and that
so
war.
That's funny.
Blah,
I was
blah,
the
blah,
same
blah.
Way. Now I'm fascinated by history.
Because as kids, they give us the most boring entrance mm-hmm. into it. It's too much of a aerial view. You know, it was only when, like, I remember, you know, having to write a book report about Paul Revere and one about, like, Benjamin Franklin. And I, you know, somehow I stumbled upon a thing where Benjamin Franklin had written an essay about farting, which, you know, as a 12-year-old, I thought was, oh my gosh, I still think it's funny that he did. It's a pretty great essay. So, of course, I included that. And he used to also like to stand outside and take moon baths. I mean, what? In the nude. You know, he thought that that, so I that's all, that was what I put into my report about Ben Franklin. The teacher was like, well, this is quite unusual. You know, I had put
You're
all my resources,
deep.
You know, I did my research. She was like, this is really one of the most entertaining, you know, you gave me a new insight into Ben Franklin, you know, and of course, like Paul Revere, he had a pet squirrel and he made a little, you know, I thought that was neat. So you know, when you're kids, what you find interesting, I think even as adults, it's kind of the day-to-day life that we find interesting. So for me, playing in the cemetery kind of gave me a taste of that. And then of course I have what I always call my origin story because, a man tried to kidnap me and my friend.
What?
Long story short. Yeah. We had showed up for that Girl Scout meeting at the church, but we didn't know it had been canceled because we just weren't paying attention. And so we were waiting, and this man comes along. He was a janitor, and he goes, hey, girls, actually, you know what? They moved the meeting to a different place. Come with me. He takes us down the hall, and my spidey sense is just telling me something's wrong. Just something's off here. He takes us into this room. Long story short, doesn't take long to realize he has nefarious intentions. And we try to escape, but he has locked the door. And thank goodness, it was only on the first floor. We get out and climb out into like these scratchy juniper bushes. I mean, it was maybe only 6 or 8 feet down. But I mean, it felt, when you're 9 years old,
oh,
it felt
yeah.
like quite a way. And we were just so shaken up. We didn't even run. We just start walking down the street going, what just happened? We're like, I think he was kidnapping us. I'm like, wow, that really happens? And then he pulls up in his car and tries to get us. And so we just looked at each other and knew, like, mad dash through the cemetery. Now, here is where it was a good thing that we had been running through that cemetery, because we knew where there was mm-hmm. the dips, you know, the little holes, the places you could trip. We could tear through that because he was a lot bigger than us and could have caught us so easily that we made it. And I remember him going, girls, girls, you know,
oh,
that back.
Creeps
it's
me
horrible.
Out.
And then there was a big thump and he fell and like, you know, hit himself pretty. There was a big thump. So we made it through the woods. We got home. It was a pretty scary event, but this was, in the 70s and no one believed us. They thought we had made up the story because it was just not the public awareness. Flash forward a million years to when I'm writing the book 6 Feet Under Texas, and I'm writing up the story about Amber Hagerman, and that's who the Amber Alert is based upon.
Oh, that, okay.
You know, when your phone suddenly goes, mm-hmm. and it's like an Amber Alert, and oh, there's a child in danger. Well, I researched her. She was like 9 years old, same age as me. A little Girl Scout. She was really good at selling her Girl Scout cookies. And people saw her, someone come and grab her and just pull her into a pickup truck. But, you know, here in Texas, I mean, a black pickup truck, there are so many of them. So anyway, long story short, as I was doing the research on her, it really brought home to me, like, what a narrow escape we had. And thank goodness we were able to run through that cemetery, and that really saved our life. And I was just going to say that again, you know, as a teenager, some friends and I just started hanging out at our local cemetery thinking we were so cool because we'd go there and like have picnics and, you know, eat lunch there maybe. And it was just a quiet place that felt like, you know, when you're a teenager, you kind of want your own spot. And but I guess you probably want to know how I got into the symbolism and all that.
Yeah, and I just find it interesting that mm-hmm. I think that we all have that fascination with cemeteries at some point in mm-hmm. our lives, but you kind of pursued it in a different way. So, you know, you've written books and you've really dug into cemeteries
yeah.
and the symbolism. And How did you even realize there was symbolism in cemeteries, especially in the U.S.? Now, I could see that maybe in New England states, you know, the older part of the U.S., you might encounter some symbolism. But what kind of symbolism do you find?
Well, yeah, that is a good point, because the more modern burial grounds in America and elsewhere really are don't have as much symbolism. They tend to be more literal, kind of like we have emojis for things, and they're very literal. Those are symbols. They're still symbols, but they're really literal. The ones that kind of the golden age of cemetery symbols that I find really enjoyable and intriguing are the Victorian era and earlier. But especially the Victorian era, because in America that was kind of a lot of cemeteries were being built then. But I found myself, well, I can give some examples, but what got me intrigued was I was doing a lot of historic research anyway for different writing projects. And I love to do, when I do research, I like to have books. I like to go to the place. I like to talk to the oldest person I can find there. Talk to a historian if I can. And I really like newspaper archives too, because sometimes really no one's alive from that era. You know, I was doing some research in the 1920s and it was really fun, but it gets confusing because those old newspaper archives, as wonderful of a resource as they can be, they sometimes don't spell people's names right. So I'd be like, you know, I'm just going to go see their grave, walk around. And I love to walk through cemeteries anyway. It just kind of, you know, brings history to life to me in a way that other things don't. And okay, so if they spelled the name, the last name is Kelly, and they spelled it, was it I-E? Was it E-Y? You know, it was just with a Y, you know, then that's what I'll go with, because you're going to get so many variants in those old newspapers. So that, you know, was... I realized I was spending a lot of time in cemeteries, but then I started to notice some of the unique symbols on them, and I didn't know what they meant. Like, why do I see ivy on a headstone? I don't mean actual growing ivy. I mean, you know, engraved. Why is there an engraving of ivy? Why is there a fern? And one thing I think when people hear that about cemetery symbols, they think it's really arcane and kind of out of reach and just too mysterious. Like, why would you care? But every symbol actually makes sense in a really poetic way, not a super literal way, but a really poetic way that I think is an important way to think. I think it's good for us. I don't know. I just find it intriguing. So I was talking about ivy and fern, and I think these are two really great examples. Ivy, when you see ivy on a stone, it stands for, you know, eternal friendship. That's one of its meanings, because ivy leaves always stay green. They don't lose color. And ivy clings to you, right? In the best possible way, like your friend would, you know, thick and thin. And then like a fern is another good one I like to say, because a fern, if you see a fern, that stands for humility and being humble. And that's because a fern can't grow in bright sunlight. It needs to be in the shadow. And so it kind of symbols. So it's a little poetic way, a little different, not super literal.
And I would have assumed those were just on there for decorative purposes. I never even really thought about them being on there for symbolic reasons.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I know. And I didn't at first. I think my entrance into really realizing there was a whole world of communication that was just going right behind my head was, you know, I think a lot of people notice when you see old fraternal organizations, like, or ones that still endure to this day, you see the Masonic compass and square with the G in the middle. And, you know, what's that G stand for? It's kind of mysterious. But and it stands for God, who is the grand architect. It stands for Gnosis, which is Greek for knowledge, and it stands for generations. So the knowledge that's passed down through generations. So, you know, it has a meaning. But that's how I started. I thought, oh, okay, there are these clubs and things. But then I started to learn more that, oh, there's so much more to it. And even today, I never tire of it. I never feel like, oh, okay, I know it all. I don't need to keep researching this. It's kind of nuanced, and I keep learning more about each thing.
And I'm going to have to pay some attention next time I go to where my mother's family plot is in Nebraska, because it goes back, I think the first stone in my family, I think it is the oldest stone there, is 1860 something. So I'm wondering if there's some symbolism that I've just never paid attention to in my own family plot.
Oh, I bet there is. Oh, I bet there is. And, you know, if you haven't, you don't, before you even get a chance to go there, you might even look on Find a Grave and see if you can find some of the ones in that cemetery. See if that cemetery is in Find a Grave, and look for some of those older stones. You might be able to see some of them in advance.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrote a whole book on understanding these cemetery symbols.
I did. You know, it started off as a file on my computer, which I do if there's just some little, you know, I'm researching one thing, but something catches my eye and I just save it for later. I have a, you know, few little things like that that are just sort of like pet little things I love to research. And I just honestly thought, well, there's got to be a book out there already. You know, I have a snake book. I have a plant book. I have several bird books. I figured there's probably a lot of cemetery symbol guides out there already. And I honestly could not find what I wanted. I wanted something that I could carry in my purse, keep in the car, and take around to different burial grounds and, you know, whip it out and see what I was finding. Now, I have all sorts of books about symbolism, but they tend to be really hefty tomes that you could use as a doorstop that are go way beyond the cemetery. And I just wanted, what would I be seeing in burial grounds? So I realized, you know what? There's that old saying, you know, write the book you want to read. And I went ahead and wrote it. And it actually remains my best-selling book of all the ones I've written. So I'm not the only one who wants to know.
So this makes sense to me that your fascination with cemeteries and living in Texas would lead you into writing 6 Feet Under Texas. Was there any surprises when you started researching people who were buried in Texas?
Oh, yeah. There were all sorts of fun things that I discovered along the way. One of them I was actually kind of proud of is I discovered the actual name of someone who was in a grave that it was just all that they didn't know his name before he died. And so it's in Corsicana, Texas. And all it says is Rope Walker, 1884. And it's such a crazy story.
Like, like Circus Rope Walker?
Even weirder.
Okay.
He was this is just such a, I love this guy. I mean, I would love to meet him. He sounds like such a character. Okay. So he was a one-legged tightrope walker. And he had a peg leg, and his wooden peg had a little notch so that he could slide it along a rope. All right, you know, scary enough. But he was a salesman for cast iron stoves, which are not lightweight. I mean, even a cast iron pan is pretty heavy. Well, he would put a cast iron stove on his back. He'd go town to town. And then to attract attention, he would look for the tallest buildings in town, which, you know, in the 1800s were like one story, two stories high. And he would stretch a rope between them, and he'd climb up there on the roof, and he'd put a potbelly stove on his back, and then he would inch his way across the street. And a crowd would gather, of course, because that's... I know. So this is how he sold his stoves. Apparently, he did a pretty good job. And he had a stage name, Professor DeHoon. He would change it up from time to time too, so it wasn't always the same stage name. But these days, it's just eye opening to me. You think about it; people weren't carrying ID cards with them,
right?
And I do come across a lot of. I've come across so many different instances. I'll get back to Rope Walker, but where people have died, maybe even just 20 or 30 miles away from their hometown, and then no one knew who they were, and so. And I love giving talks about this because sometimes the audience gasps when I explain how they dealt with this in the 1800s. Oh, so someone just died on the street here. We don't have any ID. Well, let's just embalm them really heavily and put them in the window of the furniture store, because the furniture store is usually kind of the morgue and makes coffins too. And hopefully someone will walk by and recognize them, and then we can identify them. And they might put someone in a window for a couple of weeks, hoping they could ID them.
But, you know, what else were they to do?
No.
That is interesting and morbid at the same time, but they were being as resourceful as they could.
Yeah, people would find that so unconscionable today. But back then it was like, well, we're doing the best with what we have. And, oh, there's this, we can embalm people now. Let's try this. They didn't do that with Rope Walker, though. They, you know, he died and they gave him a grave. And, you know, that was that. But luckily, while I was digging around, I found another instance. I think, because how many one-legged tightrope walkers can there be? I did find this one. Yes, he went by the same name, Professor Tahoon. But this was like in Illinois, and he had fallen off his tightrope another time. Apparently, the guy just was not afraid of anything. And yeah, and so I found from then I traced that down, and I finally found them talking about him recuperating in the hospital from that fall, and I found out his name was I think Joseph Berg. So I was pretty excited. But yeah, like there was so
figured
many...
it out.
I know.
It's really exciting.
I was so excited about it. I felt like, you know, one of those people who you see in the movies who has the yarn board, like they're all wild-eyed going, oh, I connected the dots. Like you see the crime solver. I mean, it took me a while and I was just really excited when I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe the dots connect. He has a name. I did write the local paper and tell them about it. So that was kind of fun.
Now it's up to them. Mystery solved. Yeah. You guys do with it what you want. Now, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, because if you're interested in cemeteries, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're interested in the paranormal, but you are. Do you think, because this is a debate that I've had with several people, are cemeteries haunted? Can a cemetery be haunted? I'm like, why not? Any place could be haunted, right? Now, does it make sense that the person would haunt where they're buried? I don't know about that, but maybe something happened before the cemetery was there.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think about that?
I used to be so resistant to the idea of cemeteries being haunted because I visit a cemetery, a week doesn't go by year round. I love to visit them. And I don't think of them as inherently spooky places. And I get kind of nervous because sometimes there are some paranormal groups who they will not pay attention to the rules of the cemetery and they will cause damage to headstones. So I thought, I don't experience that. I mean, cemeteries saved my life. They're cool places. I don't see this. So I was very against this, but, I had an experience in the cemetery, and I had more than one. I took a picture in a cemetery where there was some weird column of light that didn't make any sense in front of me. And then I had an experience at like 9:30 in the morning with my friend, Teal Gray, who's a psychic medium. And she can always tell if I've just come from a cemetery because she says that I end up with a little posse of children's spirits for a little bit. And even when I haven't told her where I've been, I'll walk into her office and she's like, Tui, come here. I got to clear you. you're Pied Piper again. You got a little posse with you again. I'm like, I do. So we were at this. We had just been in Mineral Wells. In fact, one of my favorite spooky towns. And we'd been up really late at a really wonderful paranormal investigation there. But it was the next morning. Let's go to the historic cemetery. And I was not thinking paranormal. I was thinking, you know, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to take photos here. And she goes, oh my gosh, you go read the epitaph over there. You just got to read it. It made me think of you. So I run over there and I see the epitaph for this man who came from Germany. And all it says is, and the orphan's true friend. So obviously he liked kids. So that's why she had pointed it to me. And I thought, oh wow, how wonderful. And so I kind of crouched down so I could take a picture of that headstone. And as I do, I hear children giggling, like, you know, just like maybe 10 feet away from me. So I stand up really quickly thinking, oh, where are these kids? And I did sort of in my mind's eye have a picture too, which should have been a clue. and I look, and all there is a little tree that nobody could have hidden behind. I realize, oh my gosh, and chills. I realize, you know what? Okay, I have to eat crow now. Apparently, cemeteries can be haunted because that was definitely not me. That wasn't a living kid. But I do have a little theory about haunted cemeteries, if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think, and this is the one of reasons I think it's so visiting cemeteries is such a good thing to do, especially historic cemeteries, is that it gets us out in nature, and we tend to, even if we're taking pictures with our phone, it kind of gets us off our screens. It really gets us into the now, and it's one of the few places where everybody knows to be quiet. You know, you sometimes even catch yourself whispering, even though there's no one else there when you're in a cemetery. There's just a sense of quiet that descends upon you. I think it's just our receptivity because bookstores and libraries are quite often haunted. People have all sorts of things happen there. People who wouldn't normally that I've talked to have an experience. And I think it's because just in general, in our modern lives, we're so noisy as we go about our day. I think we're surrounded by all sorts of disembodied intelligences that we're just missing messages left and right, and that I think if we were just a little more quiet in other places, we would probably have more. So I and now I'm like, okay, a cemetery can be haunted. I just don't think they're really inherently any more haunted than anywhere else. That's my thought. I think it's just we get quiet.
That makes sense to me because, and in the book Paranormal Texas, I noticed there was quite a few bookstores in there. But once again, you're right. If you're in a bookstore or a library, you're not as loud. And when people are, it's like, what are you doing? You know, you can't talk like that in here. You know, a Barnes and Noble is a little bit louder than a library,
Yeah,
obviously, but it's
that's
still
true.
not like a regular store. You know, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think there's just something about the quietness. We makes us a little more receptive. I sometimes think, you know, I have an aquarium, and sometimes if I've dropped a piece of food for a specific, you know, fish or a crab in there, and I'm like tapping the glass, like, look over there, and they're missing my clues. I sometimes feel that maybe that's what it's like for the unseen side, people who've passed on or whatever else might be trying to get our attention. Sometimes they are like tapping the glass, going, come on, look over there. There's this opportunity for you, or this, I want to share this with you, but you're like, doop, doop, you don't, we don't hear.
And you're right about all the noise because there's so much of it day to day, you know, with phones and just it's just never quiet.
Yeah.
Especially for kids, the younger people these days, you know.
Oh
It's
yeah.
like you always are
Oh.
got your face in something.
I think about that when my sister had her kids. She decided that she was going to make them. She thought boredom was an important part of childhood, and I'm like, yeah, we know it's not fatal. We all thought we were going to die of boredom when we were a kid at
I'm
times,
so
but it
bored.
forces you to find ways to entertain yourself. So a long car drive, she'd be like, no, I made sure they had to have, like, you know, I forget, like 1 hour of boredom at least for every, you know, hour of just plugging into all the gizmos that kids have now, because she said she wanted them to confront boredom and kind of learn how to entertain themselves. And you know, we grew up in small towns, so boy, did we ever have to learn how to entertain ourselves.
I know, same.
Yeah, you get it.
Same. So, your interest in cemeteries, obviously going into paranormal isn't much of a stretch at all in my brain. Do
Yeah.
you do investigations on your own, or do you kind of dig around for haunted locations and go in, or do you actually investigate?
Well, I am part of a group. My friend who I mentioned before, Teal Gray, who's the psychic medium, she and I have investigated places a few times. And the people that I met when I was writing my book, Paranormal in Texas, I met some really good investigators. And so sometimes they'll just invite me along to a certain historic location that they know that I wanted to be part of. Even though it's not, I'm not an official member of their team. They just know that, well, she wrote about this, or she really loves this, you know, haunted dollhouse or whatever, dollhouse museum or whatever it is. So, yeah, like last month, I was part of two investigations with Teal and her team, the Parahunters, we got permission to investigate in Oddfellows Cemetery in Denton, and also the library there. Speaking of haunted libraries, the Emily Fowler Library. So yeah, I do a little bit of that.
And what then made you decide, or I might already know the answer to this, it might be because you wanted a book about paranormal locations in Texas and couldn't find one, so you wrote it. But it's a really great book. It's got so many different locations in there that you talk about. That had to have taken a while to just get these locations together and kind of research each of them.
One thing that is helpful is that I have a good newsletter, and newsletter readers tell me places that I should investigate or look into the history. And also, I was already writing travel, about travel in Texas. And that's actually when I started. This is, again, like I was talking about how I'll always have a little, you know, a folder on the back burner. Paranormal Texas kind of started as that too, because I was writing for some like in-flight magazines and some other publications, and they just wanted pretty straightforward reporting about Texas travel. And so that was fun. But, you know, the way, like, I like to go to the location, I like to just look for the oldest people I can find. And sometimes at the hardware store, you can find some old codger there who'd tell you some stories. And I would ask them, you know, about certain things. And then I would usually say, what don't people know about your town that you think is interesting? And a lot of times they would share a ghost story with me. So I started hearing about all these different haunted places. And I thought, you know what? Also, it's hard to get actual true historic information about haunted places. It's easy to get, you know, straight up urban legend. But I mean, I'd like to find out the person. They'll say, you know, some guy named Randy Jones lived here and he, you know, raised sheep or something. And I will go and I will look and I will find historic information. And I'll be like, no, it wasn't Randy Jones. It was Randy Gallagher. And he raised a special kind of cow. And, you know, try to get the actual facts about the haunted place rather than the made up thing, which I think is helpful too. And then also I wanted to have actual addresses you could go to, because it really bugs me when you read about a haunted place. Like, I read about this haunted hot dog stand that just sounded so funny and strange. And then, you know, at the end of the article, they said, oh, you can no longer visit the haunted hot dog stand. It's been, you know, it's on private property and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, why did you entice me like that, people?
Well, and I love the idea of a haunted hot dog stand. I would definitely want to go.
Doesn't it sound interesting?
Yes.
I know, but no.
And how many locations do you have in the book? Because I kind of did like a little looking over. I would say 50.
Yeah, I would say it's about 50. Yeah, I'm trying to think of how many.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot. Did you go to each of these locations?
Oh, yes. I went to every single one. And I wanted to include places that, you know, I wanted you to be able to have like as mild or as wild of a ghost hunting experience as you wanted. Like, I include some places that, like, a lot of them where there's paranormal activity during the daytime, because I mean, I don't think a ghost has a curfew. When right. I was growing up, the stuff that I experienced in my house, what, you know, the first time it happened was like at 3:30 in the afternoon. So, you know, it's always a little pet peeve of mine that people think that nothing paranormal can happen until 3 a.m. or whatever, and it has to be in the dark. So I tried to have a wide variety of places that you could visit. And yeah, there's some places I didn't put them in. If the business owner didn't want to be known as a haunted place, I would leave them out, which was kind of sad sometimes. And then shortly before the book came out, there was one haunted B&B where she finally went public. And I just happened to catch the newspaper article around it. I had just, you know, put her out of it because she's like, no, we don't want that association. But she finally ended up having an experience where she thought there was an intruder, and she ended up calling 911, and she realized, oh, wow, I'm in denial. My place is haunted. So I was so happy that I could finally put her in the book.
Did you encounter any locations that really surprised you that it would be haunted, like a bookstore, not so much a library, hotel, you know, these older buildings?
You know, not so much the place, but one thing that surprised me was like now, if I go to a building and I were interviewing the person there and asking them, yes, I've heard your, you know, this old building is haunted and I see you have an elevator. Have you had the instances with the elevator? Because there are so many haunted elevators mm-hmm. out there and they're not all the same. It doesn't always manifest the same way, but there are different things that will happen. Haunting surrounding elevators. I don't know what the deal is. And the other thing is haunted bathrooms for some reason. Yeah. I did not know what a big thing that was, but I have come across now. I just, if I'm in a restaurant, oh, is your bathroom haunted? They'll be like, how did you know? And I'm like, because that's just what happens. But I don't know why.
It kind of seems like a cemetery. Why would you choose to hang out there?
But yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe that they can get our attention. I don't know.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Tui Snyder about cemetery symbolism and paranormal Texas. For more information, visit her website at tuisnyder.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it 3 days free there. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.